Good afternoon, listeners. Welcome to the 101st Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn program on November 15, 2014. Yes, that's how long this Saturday show has been chugging along. Last week I had a feeling that I should check the number of shows that I had done, but I didn't want to take the time then. And today I got that feeling again, and so I did, and just shows how right my hunches and feelings are. I should have listened last week because that would have been the 100th program last week. Today, I have a lot of interesting things to discuss with you, and I'm going to start with what I call a breaking news in order to justify not beginning with what I featured on the program announcement. I'll hold off the, so to speak, regularly scheduled program for a few minutes, and maybe it might even take a half hour, but I hope not. While I take care of something else that is pressing on my mind, and I just feel like it's best I get it out of the way in the beginning so I can just concentrate on what is what I had intended mostly to do today. And I'm going to start by pointing out that if you ever go to Rodney Martin's American Nationalist Association website, you can see for yourself that he has once again failed to materialize a long-announced event. For well over a month, the website ran an important announcement on its front page, and of course things are kind of a jumble there, but you know, you have to look everywhere to notice these things, but it was in a prominent position in large red letters, and it read, "Important announcement, American Nationalist League platform to be announced. ANA will announce and post its American Nationalist League platform on November 10, 2014, a platform that is firmly third way in economics and proposes real change for the white working class." And then it also said something, I don't have the exact wording, but William Johnson will be announced as our new general counsel to the ANA's executive board, and this will also take place on November 10th. Well, November 10th came and went, and so did the announcement on the webpage. On November 11th, it was not there, replaced with an image saying, "Happy Veterans Day, America." No explanation, as usual. On the principles and platforms page at the ANA website, the introduction to this American Nationalist League platform, they have a regular platform, but this was a different platform, which had been there for a while, has been removed also. This was just a one paragraph introduction to this American Nationalist League platform, but I checked that today and that is no longer there. And then on Johnson's yesterday evening on Bill Johnson's radio show that he has started doing there at ANN, he was not on his show. I listened to it for that very reason, to see if he would be, and he wasn't. And I think that's the first time he's missed since he started, which was maybe only a couple months ago. And in his place was Jamie Kelso, who spoke as if he would continue on in that slot, but still saying that it was Johnson's program at the beginning and at the end. Now, just let me also say that on Bill Johnson's radio program, it still names Mike Stathis as co-host, although he left that program after the second installment, and obviously he's not coming back. And Johnson then recently has brought on Jamie Kelso as his partner, kind of. But his name is not on there. It's still Mike Stathis. And while while the ANA always makes the changes they want to make on their show, like on their website, like making announcing, you know, things coming up that they want people to see and that they think make them look good, when it's something they don't want to make, they don't let you know about, or when it's something else, they don't want to let you know about it. So they just sweep it under the rug and hope you don't notice, I guess. So the reason that I am going over this, which I wouldn't normally have done, is because it's background to the so-called breaking news. And there's one more thing that I seem like I didn't point out. Yeah, well, I think that, I need to say this. I think that the reason, before I get to the breaking news, is that I don't know, of course, and I haven't talked to anyone, or I haven't called or tried to talk to William Johnson or anything like that, but I had a feeling when that November 10th deadline came and went and it was all removed, that things had changed with William Johnson. And this corresponded with my program last week, this very Saturday program, in which I talked about that Facebook page that has all the fingerprints of Rodney Martin on it. He has not said or not said that he has anything to do with it. He will probably want to act like he knows nothing about it. But it's not only even if he would say that somebody else did that, it wasn't him. It's exactly the same. It's a copy of other things he's done in relation to me, in the way he's written them and the pictures he uses and so on. It's all just exactly the same as what he's done, or his people working for him, people working on his behalf or whatever, have done. It's in the same type of language used and so on. And the manner of speaking, I mean, it's the same people. It comes from the same place. And I think Mr. Johnson got wind of that, and other people at the American Freedom Party, and they didn't like it and didn't want to be associated with someone who would do something like that. That's my feeling, and then other things that he's done. So we'll see, but I don't think that Bill Johnson will be coming back, and I think that the way that Jamie Kelso spoke on last night's program, he didn't indicate that he would be either, although he didn't want to say otherwise. He said he would be back next week, Jamie, and he would continue. So Jamie doesn't mind working with Rodney Martin, no matter what he does, I guess. And Jamie is also involved with the American Freedom Party, but William Johnson is the president, and I don't know what job. I was going to look for that before the show, and that's one thing I forgot to do. So I don't know about that. But enough on that. I want to go on now to that. This morning, somebody sent me a link saying he thought I might be interested in knowing about it. It was just a little clip, between 3 and 4 minute clip from probably a radio show that of Martin Lindstedt, and where Mona Montgomery had called in, and they were talking about me. And I'm not going to give you the link to that. I might put it on but I might not. You just find it if you want to find it. I think Martin Lindstedt does have a radio show. So this program is about radio shows and radio hosts, and so this fits right in. But what they were talking about just so happened to bring up a couple of things that I wanted to answer or rebut in my program last Saturday, things that Rodney Martin had said on that show he did on David Bailey's show, where he once again was the guest. He seems to be a permanent guest on David Bailey's shows, but excuse me. I had some callers, and then I knew I had a lot of other things to talk about, and I didn't want to take any more time with that. So I never got to these particular items. And afterwards, I was sorry that I didn't get to one in particular, which was the Hungarian business, that I'm a Hungarian. And this came up. I'm sorry. I had my throat all cleared out. And as soon as I started talking, I took a little lemon, which is probably a mistake, started up. So I will have to cut this out of my show, out of the final version. Yeah, the Hungarian part, I was sorry I didn't address, and now it's come up with Martin Lindstedt. So I'm just going to, from the start of this, like I say, it's just a few minutes clip, and it's on some kind of a site that you can post things, anybody can post something there. But I tried to downloaded it, but it didn't show up on my in my files. It just, I tried it twice, and it acts like it's downloading and everything, and it goes to my files, but then there's nothing there. So I was going to play it, actually, but I just, maybe just as well that I don't. So Martin Lindstedt was in the process of repeating some of this stuff that Rodney Martin has come up with. No, I think I'm... All right, he said, I just have a couple of notes here. I don't have really a concise copy of what was said. But he said that that Rodney Martin has brought out that I was born a Hungarian, and my brother was president of the Chicago Hungarian American Association, so I'm a Magyar, which means a quasi-Khazar, he said. And, well, let me address, I've already addressed this, but I will address this business of Rodney saying on that show that, well, she's a Hungarian, you know. Her family came from Hungary. All right, he knows better than that, or he should know better than that. I've explained all that, and I have it on my website. And if you want to look, it's under on the menu on the right side, towards the bottom, under Carolyn's family genealogy or something like that, and I've got more. I'd like to put up more there and write more about that, those people. But if you know anything about German history and European history, there were a lot of Germans who went to Hungary. And my ancestors from both sides of my family, some of them did that. Some, at least one, went there and then continued on producing more family. And I have that all traced back to the first ones who went there. And I know where I started out in Germany, which was in Baden, where I didn't start out, but my family left. These family members left Baden, these ancestors, left in the Kraichgau district, which is a farming area, and that's where my roots are. And they were all Germans, and they stayed in their German communities, and it was it's well known that between the Catholics of the church, the Germans, priests and the Hungarian priests, they didn't want the people to mix together, and they didn't. And there were two towns, one where the Germans lived that had the same name, one where the Germans lived, one where the Hungarians lived. And the German town became much larger and more important. That's what I am. So I'm not a Magyar. And there weren't any intermarriages in my direct line with Hungarians. So I'm, as far as I'm concerned, I'm pure German, which is more than most of these people who want to be German can say, and more than Rodney Martin can say. I might be able to bring up a little bit about where Rodney says his German family comes from, which is Prussia, and what the odds are that he's German. So he repeated this, Martin Lindstedt repeated that, without knowing anything about it. And my brother, it's not in Chicago. I was not talking about anything it's in Chicago. That's totally wrong. And my brother might have been president of this club. It's a Family Society. The correct name of it is American Hungarian Family Society. Oh, yeah. So now I need to tell you why they have that name. So this I know quite well. They built their clubhouse. These people all came to this town, which is my hometown in Illinois, and from this town in Hungary, and they were sponsored. So many came because they wanted to come, and they were sponsored by the railroad, big railroad company that needed workers, and they helped them to come over here. And so they all worked at the railroad, in the railroad yards in the beginning. And then they didn't stay there. Some of them, a few of them did, but most didn't stay as railroad workers, but that's where how that started. And so they were here, and they all came like before 1910, something like that, you know. And then the war came along, but before the war came along, they decided they'd like to build a clubhouse. And they looked for a property to buy, and they needed some money. And it was my grandfather who mortgaged his home that he had at the time, a pretty nice home. And one other man, just my grandfather and one other man were willing to do that and to raise the money so they could buy the materials. They had bought a 2 acres of land in a kind of out-of-the-way spot where a lot of them lived, you know, on, I guess you'd say, on the wrong side of the tracks kind of thing. So it wasn't so expensive. They started building. They knew how to do that. And anyway, this was, they finished building this in 19, they may have started, but anyway, they finished building it in 19, you know, the situation was that, and when they, it was, I think it was 1919 or 1920 when this photograph that I saw of after they had it completed, and they all posed as a group out in the yard in front of it, and I remember seeing that picture because my father was in it, and he was a little boy. And I remember looking for him and seeing him. And so that was, I don't know the exact year, but it would have been about then. So when they first got the, when they first went for their loan and so on and bought the property and all, their organization was called American German Family Society. That's what they had, and that's what's on the bank note and everything that they borrowed the money from. They had to borrow some money from the bank, or they did something with the bank. And that's what was originally there. But because of the anti-Germanism brought about by World War I, at some point, I don't know exactly when, they decided they had better not use that name because they might be attacked and their club might be destroyed or something. So their clubhouse and there was so they decided to call themselves American Hungarian Family Society, and that anti-Germanism lasted for quite a long time, quite a while. And then after that came World War II. They never changed it. They left it that way. And once it was that way for so long, well, it's been that way ever since. And that club is still going, and it's still a family society. Whereas you have to be one of the original. A descendant of one of the original members, or have married one of them. Oh, that's the way it goes. So that's why it's called that. And they were, of course, all German. They spoke German, and they know they're German. It's just one of those things that happened. So then he says, Lindstedt brings up that in line with that I'm a Hungarian, that I'm also a lesbian of some sort, and who was married to a Jew, Theodor Kahant. And he says, from what I understand, Theodor Kahant didn't want his Jente skank to be a lesbian, so he divorced her. Well, you see, I'm sorry to use that to really repeat what he says, but this is the way this guy talks. And this is the kind of thing that most people know better, but there are a lot of people who pick this up and like it and repeat it and say these things. Of course, Mona at this point is trying to talk, but Lindstedt won't let her get a word in edgewise. And he goes on to say, Her problem with white nationalism seems to be that it's dominated by white males. Lindstedt has a problem with white nationalism, and so does Rodney. So what is their problem? What does their problem come from? I don't know. And then Lindstedt says she's Jewish by birth. Meaning me. This is all from what Rodney has found out. And then Mona gets in, finally, and she's able to say, no, you're not right. She likes men. I think she likes the white movement because she likes white men. And then he, you know, talks over again, says she doesn't like white men. She likes Jew men like Rabbi Fink. And now he starts complaining about Bill Fink, and that's the reason that Lindstedt has targeted me from the time that he's had this hatred for Bill Fink for a long time. And from the time that I became friendly with Bill Fink and we became friends, he's talked about me. And what he used to do is make all these horrible, ugly sexual innuendos about me and Bill Fink. So I don't know how I can fit that picture and also fit the picture of a lesbian. You know, it doesn't. But and nothing that these people say makes sense. It's all contradictory, and because they're just saying anything that they've ever read or heard anywhere or dreamed up. And then he goes on to complain. What he's really unhappy about is that when he's called into my show, I don't take his call or when I find out who it is. Why should I? So he says, I think it's Rabbi Fink who went ahead and cut off 5 minutes from last Saturday's show when he called in. You know, he did call in and he introduced himself, which at least he does that. And then I said, no, I don't want to take your call. And I just, I'm gonna mute you. And I muted it. And he doesn't like that. He's complaining about that. That's why he's talking about it. As though I should listen to his stuff on my own radio program. But, you know, for him to say that he thinks it's Bill Fink who did that work, well, I've already discussed how I've learned how to use Audacity. And until I did, none of my shows were edited except for during the time of the White Network when something really went bad and there was big, dead space and so on. Then Tanstaffel would take it out, but I never asked him to edit my shows, except Mike Connor used to edit shows. But so anyway, that just is something else he's made up in his own mind. And then he says he was complaining that 3 years ago when Bill Fink was a guest on my show, he called, and I didn't let him talk. I hung up on him. Well, I did, because he was calling to attack Bill Fink, in ways that he's done over and over and over again, so there's no point in that either. I don't mind at all being said I hang up on some people. I do. Now, then he finally ends up saying that by what he has said here, by what Rodney Martin has said, it has to mean that by hanging up, not taking his call, I confirmed everything that Rodney says. And he says, so she's losing, and then that was the end of the clip. So I went into more of that than I probably needed to, but I did want to make clear about the Hungarian thing. If you ever hear this thing that I'm Hungarian, just go to my website under my Carolyn's Ancestry. That's what it's called, Carolyn's Ancestry, and look at what's there and read it, and you'll find out where that comes from, and that these people are purposely misusing information about me. And I don't do that. See, I don't do that. I stick with what people have said themselves. I don't pass on this kind of baloney, and I really have a hard time coming up with words that express what I'd like to say about it, these four-letter words, which I don't want to use on the air or in conversation even at all. But nothing really carries the meaning, the feeling as good as well as a four-letter word, which I'm not going to use. So, all right, I don't need to go into all the proofs that the American-Hungarian Family Society is made up of Germans and who spoke German and who who have German customs and so on. I don't need to go into that. So I will move on now, and I've just about a half hour's up, so I will now move on to my regularly scheduled program about Hitler's fatal mistakes and my criticism of Wolf Wall Street's program from last Sunday. And, you know, I like Wolf Wall Street. I call him Bob. I like him. He's a very nice person, I've said many times. But we do have disagreements. And when I heard the things he said on that program, and I thought, wow, that's just... And I've talked to him about it. We've already talked about it. And I told him what I was going to bring it up today. He says, well, you can do that if you want to. Now, here's a phone call already, but I'll go ahead and see who it is. It might be somebody listening, just listening on the phone. Hello, caller.
Yeah, hello, Carolyn. This is Bob here. I'm just I want to make sure I record this because, you know, I have my free Skype recorder going too. And okay. So go ahead with your show.
All right. Very good. Bob, it was nice to hear from him there. You see, we're on good terms. His show was titled The Nordic Myth, and his premise was we are only strong as the total white race all working together. And see, I have come to think that this is kind of a pie-in-the-sky idea, that I wouldn't argue about this or do a show just on this, but I have come to think that this idea that is said so often and so much that we all need to work together. I don't quite know how we are supposed to work together or how that people say, well, you know, just in general, it's just a nice thought. Well, to me, it goes against the natural order, which made people with white skin different. So we have to acknowledge the differences more than we do acknowledge them. I don't say that we can't work together. Certainly, if it's everybody who's white, it should be concerned with what's happening to the white race. And a lot of it is our own doing by not reproducing. There, you can blame a lot of things and people for that. I agree with that. It's not all our fault. I don't even think it's my fault that I didn't reproduce. It's things I learned and ideas I had and things that didn't make it perfectly easy or just right socially and so on. And so I could say, oh, well, no, this, you know, isn't the time and so on. So it's, there's a lot of things that go on, but there's a lot that is just selfish and a selfishness that people find life is easier if they don't have families. So there's that. But this is happening, and every person that's white should care about it. And a lot of the people who talk about it are the ones who don't have families themselves. Maybe some of them do. You just don't hear them mention anything about it. But a lot of them don't. The thing is, we should care about that, but I think we need to acknowledge our differences more than we do to make things actually work. And I say we're only as strong as we select the best to lead us and have the loyalty and humility to follow those best leaders. And this is the problem that we have. Nobody will follow anybody else. And nobody agrees on who is the best. But I think that it can't happen without that. It can't happen with all individual groups having their own leaders and ideas and then saying, well, we're all going to work together. You're not working together that way. Another word for humility can be obedience. You have to be willing to obey the leadership, if the leadership is going to be able to accomplish something, and I don't see much of that going on. Now, that's just the general first statements, but going on about Hitler. Now, Bob admits, Bob has a little bit of a mixed attitude toward Hitler compared to me. and a lot of other people. But and that's his history too. And he admits that Tom Metzger is actually very down on Hitler. Bob has been associated with Metzger over the years, but he now says he disagrees with him on so many things. And in my opinion, you know, Metzger has gone to the left, too far to the left, and he sees the problem as corporate America being the what's evil more than the Jew. Of course, you can say the Jews running corporate America, but not totally. And it's just that he portrays it as corporate America in this class-based thinking that it's rich versus poor, you know. And Hitler tried to stay away from that and go into a national basis for uniting. And because as soon as you get the working class versus the managerial or executive class or ownership class, the poor versus the rich, you're going to join together with others from other countries, and you're not going to stick with white people. It becomes a communist type thing, and crosses racial lines, and this is exactly what happens even with Metzger. He talks about the whites, but he will work with a lot of people, and all of these type class-based thinkers will work with whoever agrees with them on their ideology. It becomes ideology more than race and nationality. So there's a big divide here. It's very, you know, it's a huge ideological difference between the one and the other. So the key question, you know, that Bob says that he goes by, though, is what is your stand on the Jew? Bob is very focused on the Jew. He calls him the Kike Jew. And I don't care for that. But I think that he seems to think that there's a difference. I think Bob is one of these who sees the bad Jews. The Kike Jew is the problem, but there's a whole lot of just ordinary Jews who are innocent and they're not the problem. So there's a little bit of a difficulty there. Now I've got another caller. I don't know who it is so early in the show, but I'll check and find out who it is. Hello.
Just listening on my cell phone.
Okay, all right. Very good. Okay, now some things that, some points that Bob made. Nordics are most pliable to the Jews. Now, that was his big thing about the Nordic myth, that the Nordics are not the best of our white race because they're too pliable to the Jews. Well, he actually said those words, I think, but he may not have exactly meant it that way. I would say that the Nordics had less exposure to Jews from back when, earlier days, and therefore maybe they were more had less resistance. But they're most pliable to not so much to the Jews, but to the whole idea of not disliking otherness or not being intolerant of all others and other races and so on. And I agree that Nordics are seem to be the most have the most altruism in them, which is a very good trait among your own people. And they were amongst their own people for so long that when they suddenly became exposed to all the rest of the world during this age of multiracialism that's been promoted so much, they were unprepared to have any defenses. And they don't seem to have the defenses, that's true. But I don't think that they couldn't gain the defenses if they could be taught properly, but it's hard to teach people these things when they're in the midst of all the propaganda. So Now, point number two that I see that Bob made is in the United States, we are very diverse as whites, but Swedes and Norwegians are not, but are homogeneous. Well, the United States is not an example of standing up to Jews. You know, he says we're very diverse as whites in the United States, and he thinks that that's good. But the Swedes and Norwegians, you see, are not. They're too much the same. They're too Nordic. Well, but the United States has not stood up to Jews at all. And even before it was so inundated with Mexicans and the blacks increased their numbers so much, we never did. So, and the U.S. is doing the same thing. It just doesn't stand out as much to us because we're too used to it. In that we're behaving the same way as the Swedes and Norwegians, but it doesn't stand out because we've had all these other races in our land for a much longer period of time. It goes way back. We had Spain as the Aztecs and so on. We were close to these peoples. And we had the American Indians, so-called, and we had a lot of things going on here, and we're used to having different, I guess I should stick with the white people. We're used to having many different Europeans here, not right in the beginning, and we're not that old, but we did get used to it, and it just happened very naturally that we had a diverse diverse number of people from different European countries in the United States. So I don't see that. I don't understand this example. You know what he's saying here, because to say that we're diverse in the United States and that makes us stronger against whatever. We're not strong against anything. And number three is he said Germany is not homogeneous, and they are the one country that put up a stiff fight against the Jews. Well, I agree that they are the one country that put up a stiff fight against the Jews, and I'm glad to hear him say that and mean it and admit it. And I think that that's a very important point for me, but that Germany is not homogeneous, I think, is going too far. What is it if it's not homogeneous? Then he said, well, they're not as homogeneous as the Swedes and the Norwegians. Well, but okay. But the fact is they're all Germans and very much unlike the United States. They can't be compared to the United States, as he's sort of comparing Germany to the United States, but they really can't. They're much more homogeneous than the United States. And number four is that he says Germany is a little like the United States, except they all speak German, and even Austrians, who sort of are and sort of not part of Germany, I never could figure that out. Well, that's an exact quote there. I would say that, I don't think Germany is like the United States at all, racially, and among its white inhabitants, and of course they speak German, and in the United States you don't have people all speaking the same language, except basically we all speak English. It's hard to separate when you get to a country like the United States. It's kind of hard to separate the white portion out from the total. But I think that's what Bob is trying to say here, that the white portion of the United States. He thinks that the Germans are in their mix are similar to the Americans, white Americans in their mixed state. Well, the first thing you know that I don't want to say about this is that if he doesn't figure out that Austrians, it's because he's not trying too hard. The Austrians are German. period. He should learn that. Austrians are Germans, and they're identical with other Germans. I think that Bob is somewhat influenced by the Allied military propaganda that has insisted and still insists that Austria be seen as a separate country and a separate people. The only reason that they became separated is because of the Habsburg dynasty, which took control of what it could, and was not able to. Then the Prussian Empire was in the north, and that took a large part of what is Germany today. And they couldn't get that, so the Germans in the southern part there were in a different empire than the ones in the north. But they're still the same people, which was shown during 1938, but it was denied, and it's been denied ever since. It's still continued to be presented as that the that Austria was taken over, was invaded by Hitler's forces and taken over, you know, against his will, and like one of these occupied countries. And because they never stop saying that, a lot of people think that that's true, but it's not. So that's the thing with Austria. Number five, the thing is that Bob, this is Bob, in my words, I guess, the thing is that there are a lot of sub-ethnicities in Germany itself, and I think he gets this directly from Veronica Clark. I do think Bob's been listening to Veronica Clark. A lot of people have, and even though he's heard probably some bad things about her, he's already got taken up. He already took up those ideas and took them into himself, and they seemed convincing to him. And he goes on to say, so it's probably the most diverse of all the white countries in Europe, all right? There are a lot of sub-ethnicities in Germany itself, so it's probably the most diverse of all the white countries in Europe. Well, you know, I thought, what a statement that is. The most diverse of all the white countries in Europe. What about Switzerland? There are four official languages in Switzerland because there are four different groups of people. The French, I should say German first, because the largest group in Switzerland is German. After that, French, then Italian, and then something called Romansh. I don't even know what that is. It's small, but it's considered a separate entity, and they have their own language. So those are four languages that are recognized in Switzerland. And Switzerland is pointed to all the time as a multilingual, multi-ethnic European country, and how well it works there, you know, and how we can all get along just like they do in Switzerland. And what about Belgium? Same thing. It was put together by part of France and part of the Netherlands and part of Germany, and it's got three official languages and areas, the French, the Dutch, and the German. And in Italy, you have a huge difference between the north and the south, much more than you ever have between the northern and southern Germans. You know, they even look different. You have the Napoli, and the Sicilians dominating southern Germany and southern Italy, and you've got blonde-haired, blue-eyed Italians up in the northern part. Some of them are even German. There's a section in the very north, the Tyrol, which is German, but Germany allowed Italy to keep it. Hitler allowed Italy to keep it, to keep peace with Italy, and now it'll never come back now. But they did want to come back to Germany. Then you have even in Great Britain. What about, you have English, Welsh, Irish, and Scots in Great Britain. That's four different groups. So you used to have four different languages, but they mostly speak English now. However, they're different. And then they're even different, like some are Celts and some are Anglo-Saxon, some are Germanic. That's just the ones that I'll mention. And what about Russia? In Russia, you have this that people think is European, and you have a lot of different groups, ethnic groups, even different racial groups, sort of, pretty much, in Russia, making up. Well, these other groups don't even call themselves Russian in Russia. It's a federation of independent states. So, the... Bob says, the white race only taken as a whole together will we succeed. Well, I didn't write that very well, but he means only by taking the white race as a whole, working together, will we succeed. Well, I just, say that if this is disproven by what you just said, Bob, because the Germans, he said the Germans were the only ones who ever stood up to the Jew. Well, the Germans, not being the most diverse at all, did the best job and the only job against the Jew. The United States is most diverse and it welcomes the Jews. Other countries are not very, some of the other countries I mentioned there, they don't fight against the Jew that are a mixture of different whites groups. So it's basically a false premise altogether that he says that only the white race taken as a whole will succeed. Can we succeed only if we all work together on this? That's a idea that is intuitive, it seems right, it makes sense, it sounds good, and we would like to see everybody working together. Well, that would be great. It would be great. But it's never happened, and I don't see it happening. And I think it's wasting time. It's a waste of time when time is so short right now to try to get all whites working together before we can do anything. As I said above, my idea is, I think a better idea is to get the best and to support the best to do it and not to cater to everybody's opinion and make sure everybody feels good about it and everybody, is on board and just the way they should be. That's why I don't like that too much. Now, seven, Bob says the Swedish situation shows the problem for Bob. Bob says that this is where we see the problem. This reveals it. He starts giving all the real reasons for the sudden, historically speaking, sudden liberalism of Swedes, which has nothing to do with Nordicism. I'm saying he's saying one of the main problems with Sweden is its liberalism. I don't know if he said that or I said that, but liberalism and Nordicism is not the same thing. I say that Jewish corporations targeted Sweden. Basically, I just don't write everything in here. This is my rough notes. He's saying that the Swedish situation shows the problem of Nordicism, of the Nordics. And I'm saying that's not because they're Nordic. It's because of, and their liberalism, their liberal attitude is not because they're Nordic, but it's because they've been targeted and they're naturally more altruistic. Well, that has to do with their Nordicism, okay. But they've been especially targeted, I think, at this time, in recent years, and then he quits talking about this for a while, and takes some calls. And then he says that Hitler was too much of a Germanophile. He gets into something else, into that same old criticism of Hitler. He was too German. If he had been more of a European, then he would have accepted Vlasov and the others who were willing to fight against the Kike Jew-controlled Soviet Union. Well, really, I had a lot of problem with that. All of a sudden, accepting Vlasov is what would have saved the day, and the other Slavs who were willing to fight against the Kike Jew, and as he puts it. And he said if Hitler had been more of a European, and as a European, his definition of European is takes in all the Slavic Eastern Europe. I mean, so this is he thinks if Hitler had thought, God, Hitler's whole motivation was to save Germany and Germans, but he was supposed to be suddenly become a European and try to be interested in saving all West and East Europe, including the Russians who didn't like the Soviet Union, including all the Slavic countries and then the non-Slavic countries there too, and be thinking about all of them and putting them into the fight against Moscow and Stalin. This really isn't even realistic. And how many of these others were willing to fight? And particularly fight against the Soviet Union and fight against the Jews. There's no specifics here, you know, in what he says. It's just a sweeping statement that assumes way too much. So let's look at this Vlasov situation. Bob goes on to say that Vlasov had 200,000 trained soldiers and 3 million that could be trained. So, okay, he's only got 200,000. How much is that? You know, that's not a very big group to go up against this new million or 2 million fresh troops that the Soviet Union had brought forth from the East. But 3 million that could be trained. Well, here again, Bob is just, you know, forgetting the details and how all this is going to happen and just saying, oh, there were 3 million loose people there that could be trained to fight, that didn't like communism. Wow. You're supposed to hand over these 200,000 Russian prisoners of war, I guess, and certain other Russian discontents, to a Russian general who had been captured. Now, look what he could have done if he wanted to be loyal to his Russian heritage rather than to Germany, with all the supplies that he had, with his 200,000 army and so on. They didn't trust him. See, the thing was, they basically, Hitler wasn't willing to trust a Russian. And Bob thinks that this is wrong, that he should have been thinking like a European and trusted all Europeans, to, you know. But this is, some of the things that happened show that Hitler was right. You don't know what might have happened, but the thing is that Bob assumes that if he had just allowed Vlasov to do this earlier on, the whole war would have been over in no time. If Vlasov was going to work these miracles with his 200,000 troops, and also a lot of these people who could be trained. It's just an estimate, but they were doing other important work. These people weren't just sitting all these millions sitting around in camps. They were all put to work doing things that were important. They just weren't fighting. If you put them, if you turn them all into fighters, who would do all the other things that needed to be done? And I don't mean just the working, but I mean stuff that had to do with the army supply and Goebbels. Bob says Goebbels fought Hitler on this, but at the time was out of favor because of his philandering. So he's telling us that that Goebbels thought Hitler was wrong about using Vlasov. And this didn't even start until 1943. You need to realize this. But that Hitler wouldn't listen to Goebbels because he was out of favor because of his philandering. Well, I'm asking Bob to document this. What would that have mattered when it came to winning the war, whether he was philandering or not? I don't even think that Goebbels fought Hitler on this. I couldn't find anything about a falling out between Goebbels and Hitler over this, or Goebbels being out of favor. Hitler was irritated with Goebbels about his philandering because Magda was complaining about it and was about ready to divorce him, and Hitler didn't want that. And that was a personal kind of a thing. It didn't have anything to do with this. You know, Hitler could keep this separate, certainly in his thinking. And I don't believe that Goebbels ever pushed against Hitler like that. He always accepted what Hitler's decisions were. And that was what everybody was supposed to do. Anyway, once Hitler made a decision. But Hitler was very wary of Vlasov and his intentions, as I already said. And on April 3rd, 1943, he made that clear in a speech to his high command that such an army under General Vlasov would never be created. It says that, okay, and then back to Goebbels, there's a quote from Joseph Goebbels' diary, March 1st, 1945. 1945, friends, in March, the only one that's mentioned. Goebbels wrote in his diary, "General Vlasov is a highly intelligent and energetic Russian commander. He deeply impressed me." That's all that he wrote. And you know that there is that photograph that I use for today's program of Goebbels at meeting with Vlasov and another Russian, and I guess another aide of his, a German aide of his. And this was in March 1945, or February maybe, February 1945, but very late in the game. And I don't know of Goebbels meeting Vlasov before this. So I couldn't find anything about Goebbels being in favor of Vlasov. But Heinrich Himmler was he was urging this for a while. To Hitler, so maybe I got people's names mixed up now. Maybe Bob has this confused, or maybe he's got something, and he can after I get done here, he can bring that up. So that's one point I'd like him to clear up. And then Bob makes another of these really strong statements that saying if Hitler had taken Vlasov's offer, it was over. That meant Germany would win World War II immediately. And I just think, what kind of a statement is that? He seems to think that this Vlasov was just going to run through everything all on his own when these German and SS and Wehrmacht divisions and so on, which were tough, tough, tough fighters, were not able to, were hanging on there, that this Vlasov was just going to, I think his reasoning is that the Russians would recognize him as fighting against Stalin, and somehow the whole country would just fall apart because of that. I think that's part of what he has in mind, but anyway, I don't see the sense in that. Now, I've got something here from Wikipedia. Okay, that I think is important, so I'm going to read it. It's taken from one of the pages, and it says, according to Shalimov, Vlasov emissaries lectured to the Russian prisoners of war explaining to them that their government had declared them all traitors and that escaping was pointless. And this tells me that they weren't convinced that Vlasov was trying to convince them at this time that they should fight with him, that he didn't have all these ready fighters, these Russian prisoners of war. They weren't ready to fight against their own allegiance, you know, their own country like that, and that Vlasov was talking to them. He was allowed to do that, and he proclaimed to them that even if the Soviets succeeded, Stalin would send them to Siberia. If the Germans lost, they weren't going to be liberated. They were going to be sent to Siberia, and they were going to be killed, too, by Stalin because he considered them traitors for surrendering or getting caught. And that is a pretty well-known fact. And so he was having to try to convince these POWs by using these arguments. Only in September 1944, think how late that is, did Germany finally, at the urging of Heinrich Himmler, here it is, initially a virulent opponent of Vlasov. So Himmler went from being an opponent, but you know, the thing about Himmler, I should finish the sentence. Only in September 1944 did Germany finally permit Vlasov to raise his Russian Liberation Army. Vlasov formed and chaired the Committee for the Liberation of the Peoples of Russia, proclaimed by the Prague Manifesto on 14 November 1944. A month later, he was allowed to get started. Now, going back to Himmler here for a minute, Himmler was an opponent of Vlasov, didn't think any of that was a good idea. But by September 1944, Himmler saw the writing on the wall, and he knew the war was lost, whereas Hitler had a different mindset and did not want to ever give up. That was part of what, that was part of his belief system all his life, that if you don't give up, you'll find a way. You can still find a way. And he knew that that was true from his own experience and from the lessons of Frederick the Great and other people. Even Hans Ulrich Rudel believed that way. And he did some amazing things because of that belief. So there's a difference there in Himmler and Hitler. And Himmler wanted to be more realistic about the whole thing. You could put it that way. So Hitler let Vlasov get started and do a certain amount, but I don't. Well, it was so late. He was finally allowed to go out into the field. We'll get to that. Then Vlasov also hoped to create a Pan-Slavic Liberation Congress. See, he wasn't just satisfied with fighting for the Germans or defeating Stalin. He was also trying to create a Pan-Slavic Liberation Congress. So, but Nazi political officials, considering the I don't think that's true. The Nazi political officials would not permit it. So Vlasov's only combat against the Red Army took place on February 11, 1945. So by then, it really was a lost cause, but they let Vlasov go out. And because others were still fighting too, and after 3 days on the River Oder, he went to fight on the River Oder. After 3 days of battle against overwhelming forces, the 1st Division of the ROA, which was his group, was forced to retreat and marched southwest to Prague in German-controlled Bohemia. Now, here's the thing. On May 6, 1945, well, the war was over then. Hitler was dead, but it hadn't, surrenders had not been signed. But Vlasov received a request from the commander of his division, General Sergei Bunyachenko, for permission to turn his weapons and his units against the Nazi SS forces and aid the Czech resistance fighters in the Prague uprising. So you see, Vlasov's army went to Prague, and then obviously that's where they were. And then his second in command, or one of them, one of his commanders, was convinced that they needed to switch sides now. Let's see, which is always possible to happen. Switch sides and help the resistance, which was mainly communist. The Czech resistance was at least half communist, if not more, and turn his and fight against the SS that were still fighting there, trying to hold on to Prague, because that's just what they did. And this I think is pretty disgusting. Well, at least it says that Vlasov at first disapproved. Of course, this is May 6th. There's not much time left, but he disapproved, but then reluctantly allowed Bunyadchenko to proceed. Well, you know, I suppose he was considering his personal options or their personal options of his men, thinking that maybe if they did that, they would be able to survive. But it didn't help him. They hung him up. The Soviets, put him on the gallows after his trial. But, you know, he's no hero by doing this. He's not being a hero. He's not sticking with the Germans. He's turning. And, of course, we know the Romanians did that. The Hungarians did that. But the Czechs did it. Everybody did it. But, this is what you find when they're not, when their people are not fighting for their own homeland and their own people and so on, their own. It's not the same. And these are white people. These are all white people. Now, then, 3:10 already. I was going to do some break music. Then Bob says Hitler's first mistake was in 1927 with the secret protocol on the Ruhr Valley. Well, I don't even know what that was. I looked and looked and looked, and all I came up with was the Locarno Pact in 1926, and it had something connection with the pact on the eastern boundaries of about Danzig and the Polish Quarter and Upper Silesia and so on. That was the Locarno Pact took care of the western boundaries and made them kind of peaceful, but didn't do anything about the eastern boundaries, which Schumann called a festering wound in the heart of all patriots, and none could abandon the hope of recovering these territories in the future, which is what then did happen. This is in the 30s, in the 1930s. So I don't know. I've got a bunch of stuff here that I found. It's kind of interesting, but it's not. I don't see anything like what about secret protocol on the Ruhr Valley. But this is the kind of thing that Bob says with a very expert-like sound. He says he doesn't think he doesn't try to talk as an expert. He's just putting out ideas. But when he does, when you listen to the show, he's just, wow, like, you know, it's this and that, you know, no question about it. And he's got these people listening who don't know, and I don't know how much they remember of it or recall of it, but that's, in April 1926, a non-aggression pact was signed between Germany and the Soviet Union. I don't know what that one was. But that's before Hitler's time, you see. So I don't know what he's talking about, truthfully. I think he might have the date wrong. He might have a lot of things wrong there. He'll have to explain that. And then finally, he said Hitler and Abe Lincoln both led to great disasters. He thought it would be good to somehow have a show about the two of them or something, because they had something very much in common. They both waged wars that were turned out to be a great disaster for white people, is what he means. I'm just sorry that Bob wants to blame Hitler for the disaster of World War II. You know, I think that's short-sighted. He's not blaming the right people. is he? He does, but then he'll turn around and say, well, if Hitler had had done this or done that, you know, he wouldn't have lost. I've never accepted something like that, and I don't accept it now. Okay, and I've got a recap from Bob. He says, at the end of the show, he gives a recap, and he says some things. I've got some notes on it here. He says, Europeans are Nordic, Alpine, and Mediterranean. I believe the reason Scandinavians are allowing all the non-whites in their empathetic Nordic, okay. I can't tell what's him and what's me. Well, it must be him. He believes the Scandinavians are allowing all the non-whites into their country because of their empathetic Nordic minds. That's just putting that in my own words. That it's a lot harder for them than for a mixed white population, such as Germany had. So he considers Germany a mixed white population because he thinks that the Scandinavians are mostly Nordic, whereas the Germans have Nordic, Alpine, and maybe some Mediterranean. He says, now I don't know how many Meds are in Germany, but Germany is loaded, I mean loaded, with Nordics and Alpine. You know, does this really make any sense? If Germany is loaded with Nordics and also Alpine, why were they so much more resistant than the Scandinavians? And he's not sure that there's hardly any Meds in Germany, but of course there are. There's enough of that. There's quite a bit of it in the Austrians, but they're still not any different from other Germans. And don't particularly look different either. Germany has, then Bob says, but Germany has many distinct ethnicities within it, not just two or three primary ones, but they're all over the place. What do you mean? What are these distinct ethnicities, not just two or three, that are all over the place? Each one seems to have their own culture, and yet they're part of Germany. There are not that many cultures. There's regional cultures in Germany, just like there are in the U.S. and even in France and in Britain, even in England, there's regional cultures that are different. And that's typical. And yet they all combined under Adolf Hitler, and they all combined really under Bismarck before Hitler to create a nation with one language and one dominating culture. You don't find that in America because America is too diverse. Well, you know, what's he saying there? None of that really speaks for what he's trying to say, that there's all these different cultures, distinct ethnicities in Germany, not just two or three primary ones. He has to have gotten that from Veronica Clark. It has to be from Veronica Clark. Then he says the Jews are, and he ends up saying, trying to talk real positive and saying the Jews are back on their heels, you know, or they're losing, you know. It's like Lindsay saying that I'm losing, or maybe saying the Jews are losing. Or I say, are they? You know, Bob seems to always want to be an oracle. He's always saying what's going to happen. Then he says, well, I'm not a prophet. I can't say what's going to happen. But, then he says what he thinks is going to happen. And what would have happened if Vlasov had been able to be let go and do his thing in 1943. I want to close this part with saying the last sentence of Adolf Hitler's political testament, which he did not forget to mention in all that stressful time when he wrote this before at the end of his life. And he said, above all, I charge the leaders of the nation and those under them to scrupulous observance of the laws of race and to merciless opposition to the universal poisoner of all peoples, international Jewry. So Adolf Hitler was never someone who thought that Germany was made up of a bunch of different races, in spite of the fact that when he understood the race and folk and so on. He knew that there were different strains in Germany, but I don't deny that either, and I wouldn't. But and I asked Bob if he had ever been to Germany, and or even outside of the United States. And he told me he hadn't. He had only been in Canada and Mexico. Well, going, you know, across the border to those places is not anything. And Bob talks like he knows exactly what Germany is like and how it's, what it's made up of and its people and so on. And I think it's a mistake when we have Bob is not the worst person. There's all kinds of radio hosts who are putting out information that they don't really know. And I can't tell you how many times I hear it said, well, I heard this, or I think that, or I read somewhere. And then they go on to say these things. And people don't really pay close enough attention. And they hear these things, and then they get repeated. And there's just so much bad information out there and mistaken information. And I think that's far more damaging to our cause than some lack of everybody on board, white unity kind of a thing. I think that the mistaken information that we're given is far more damaging. And there's nothing more mistaken that's put out than things about Hitler, because people all like to talk about him, that's for sure. Well, I've got some interesting stuff, but I don't have to go over it. So I'm going to, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to play a little music here. Well, maybe I won't. Maybe I'll go directly to the phones. I was determined to play something, so I'll go to Bob and see if Bob is ready to respond to this if he wants to.
Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Bob.
How do I answer? I wrote this down. How do I answer thee? I cannot count the many ways. There's so much that you put out there. What a
I was going to say in the beginning how much I like you, and I'm not doing this in a mean way, but only because I need to always clarify things. So, people can tell that now how nice you're being.
Well, we must be ruthless with the truth. That's all there is to it. I mean, if we're not ruthless with the truth, then if not Jews, ethnically, we're Jews in our mind, because they are not ruthless with the truth. They twist the truth into a chaos, a scheming, which benefits only the Jews. And for that alone, they should be cast out from our presence. But anyway, one thing I wanted to tell you is I've learned about Hungary. You mentioned early on about your heritage. There are only two of many provinces, I don't know how many, maybe 15, 10, but two of many provinces who are actually Huns. And they are Asiatic-type Huns, not that they're fully Slope-eyed and everything, but they have that Turkic ambience about them. But there are only two of the many. The rest are, I think, they call them Magyars, but I think they're about as close to being Germanic or Teutonic or something like that. But it does get confusing in Hungary because of that, and then they call the place Hungary, you know. So there's a lot of gray area there, and we always have to take that in mind. Now I'm going to go down to
I have some information here from what is going to be on this coming Thursday's Table Talk program. I thought we would read it last Thursday, and I was going to bring it in today, but we didn't. But I still have it here in case I wanted to talk about it. But yeah, Hitler makes the comment, he's talking with Forster, or Gauleiter Forster and Bormann. They're talking about Germanizing people and being, and he says that he made the comment this wasn't the Hungarians, this was the Bulgarians, that the Bulgarians were Turkoman, from the Turkoman race, which I guess he means Turks, and then the Czechs were Mongolian. their origin was Mongolian. That's what he said.
So a lot of contention there. A lot of contention there, and But I think the Bulgarians, I think they call them Pechenegs or something like that. But, you know, the next thing, I just wanted to bring that up about Hungary, that it's, again, it's not a completely homogeneous country. Whereas my whole bottom line about Sweden and Norway is they are very close to being homogeneous as compared to all the rest. And not just homogeneous, but at the, what we would consider the top level, which we're finding out, is that top level not a bridge too far, so to speak? I mean, because of those naivety and those gullibility flaws. But before we go farther, I must say, I do not follow Veronica Clark at all, particularly when I found out her background. But I only heard her a few times on Spingola's show, and she may have been on your show. I don't know. She was probably on Spingola's show.
But she was on Spingola a lot. But a lot of people liked her. You know, stuff didn't come out about her. Originally.
I never did. I never trusted her when she started promoting the blacks in the National Socialist Armed Forces so much. There were some. There were a small number, sure. I mean, we're fighting a war. We don't look gift horses in the mouth, number one. And also, I truly believe that Hitler understood that National Socialism, the way he understood it, was only for Germany. The National Socialism in other countries must be their variation, even in black or brown or slope-type Asian countries. It must be their own variation. But it was German National Socialism.
I don't think he ever talked about other variations. I think that other variations is a little bit overdone.
Well, other variations means the racial compositions, I'm sure. But anyway, that's the way I see it. I'm not going to argue the point. If we go there,
everybody would do it themselves. But here's the thing, Bob. Let me say that Veronica Clark is the only one that I know who's been talking a lot about how mixed Germany is. And I don't know why you got on this.
No. She's talking race. I'm talking much more ethnicity. Although there is a
She's talking all of that.
Yes, but she's pushing the blacks.
Particularly the
Ruhr Valley blacks, which were a leftover from World War I when the French occupied, and Hitler was really pissed off about that. But,
tell me about what you said about the secret protocol of the Ruhr Valley. What is that supposed to be?
You got that wrong, and I'm sorry.
Well,
you didn't
I didn't
go
get it wrong.
My...
I got it straight from your program. See,
no,
it's straight
you
what
didn't.
You said.
Let me explain, Carolyn. Let me explain.
Okay, you can. I want you to.
Okay, at that program, there's a little info tab on the left. It says 117- the Nordic myth, but to the left, that's an information tab. If you go there, and you'll see, and I'm going to read it right down. It's only a paragraph. Warren Church of Now, Sunday Social, Sweden and even Norway prove that the white race's Nordic faction is not the pinnacle, that the white race is great only when taken as a whole. And then I talk about the two callers. Now, show related links. I take you to the link at resist.com that goes into the Road for Resurgence, which was a secret protocol proven that Adolf Hitler created for Emil Kierdorf, who was a Ruhr Valley leader. And this is 1927 or before. It came out in 1927, explaining to those people, to those elites, German elites. I don't know if Jews were involved or not. These, from what I can see, they were German industrialists and others. But a secret protocol assuaging them of their fears that the NSDAP was essentially, it's not a Marxist-type worker-only organization. And I actually, if you read the thing, Carolyn, you look at it and say, well, there isn't all that much there. He's just making a few points. My bottom line is that the problem I have with it is that it had to be secret. He's making
What is this thing? Even after what you said, I'm not real clear about it. And how come it's nothing's ever been made of it? How important
because
was it, and why don't you read
20, it? Carolyn, there were only 20 created, and people can go to the link. If I read it, it will take the rest of the show. It's not short. It's not long.
You said it was just a short thing.
The link.
What is the link? Read the link, and I'll type it up real fast while you're reading it.
I just gave you where it is. It's at my website, and it's in the information tab. If you want to type all this up, it's right there. It's at resist.com/updates 2013. You know what I'm saying. It's right there in the information tab. But the more important thing, people can go there.
I was at your website yesterday, and I found it very hard to maneuver on that strange website, but I'm going to go there right now.
It's okay. TalkShoe. Yeah.
Now it's on TalkShoe. TalkShoe is really hard.
Well, no, it's TalkShoe 85. The show number is 85857.
Well, wait a minute. Is this tab at resist.com or at TalkShoe?
No. I said it's at my site, not resist.com. Resist.com is Tom Metzger's. But that
is
the link.
Resist.com.
Well, yes, because that's the link.
You sent me something from resist.com.
Well, yes, but that's the link that's shown in the tab, the information tab, that talks to you. I don't have a website as such.
Well, give me the link. What is screen it out? What is it?
It's too long. It's too long. Come on. It's too long for a show.
Thing is very impossible to get to. How come it's not written about in anything to do when you Google this question? It's not there.
Because there were only 20 of these things ever created.
20 of these things? What
20,
things?
20 of the secret protocol called the Road to Resurgence, which was created by Adolf Hitler, and the link that shows the whole thing is at resist.com, not my website. But the way you get there is you go to my TalkShoe account. Well, yeah, but you investigated all this stuff. You go to Wikipedia enough, and Wikipedia, I hope you understand, is a kaiju-controlled source. Jimmy Wales is a goddamn Jew.
Wikipedia would not want to have this on their pages? This is not anything
because
that's
they're scumbags. Because they're scumbags. Carolyn, do you ever know how these people treat white nationalists on Wikipedia?
Don't give me a
big
lecture on this. I know all about this stuff.
I'm not
going to
lecture you about anything, but you're giving me.
But you're making
you're
it very difficult
problem.
To get to this. No, I'm just looking for this.
Carolyn, I thought that since you're so detail oriented with Wikipedia, that
would
have seen
to find
information
out about it now.
The information tab. At my site. It's very simple.
You said it's at TalkShoe. How much time do you think spent looking at the TalkShoe page?
Well, you said you went to my. You said you went and listened to my TalkShoe show.
Yeah, all I have to do is click and listen to it.
Well, yeah, but did you listen to it at Daily Stormer or at TalkShoe?
No, I listened to it at Daily Storm.
Well, that's a real problem, isn't it? You might want to go to the source.
Well, you know, what?
Well, come on. You go to Wikipedia, Wikipedia isn't as valid.
You said Hitler's first mistake was this secret protocol. Why was mistake? That's what you said.
Because it was secret.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yes.
So he shouldn't have done anything secret.
Well, not anything, but that kind of thing. Says that he's in league, or at least he wants to pull a bait and switch on the working class and be in league only with the elites, or at least he wants to use
now, see,
the
you
elites.
Take that way. I'm saying
you
go on and on about the working class and Hitler, because Hitler didn't want that kind of a class conscious country.
I agree.
As I already
I agree.
Pointed out, he wanted Germans to work together. I'm telling you you can get people
I agree with everything you just said in the last minute.
But you're not going to get all whites to work together.
Carolyn, I agree with everything you said in the last minute. But he was a pragmatist also. Hitler was a great, I call him a philosopher king. Hitler was a great philosopher king. But to win, he understood he had to be a pragmatic politician. So he had to play the game to a certain extent. The problem is that it turns out that that was not the best course. Because
well, you think
eventually,
so.
Eventually
you think so,
the road
a lot
to research.
Don't agree.
Well, right. I just look at the results. I just look at the results.
Well, you have a result.
You know, I start from the result and work backwards. I start
yeah,
from the result
wrong,
and work backwards.
See? That's wrong.
Well,
because
I, well
you can't
that's
say
the way I do it.
Because they lost that we have to look and see what Hitler did wrong.
Well, because
that's,
we must learn. Not that not that Hitler's
not
a bad guy.
That Hitler
we must
did
learn.
Wrong. Why don't you look at what the other people did wrong?
I did, well, that's obvious. To me, it's obvious. To me, it's obvious
well, you
that
it's
the Christ used control.
There you go with
you
the
know,
statistics.
It is. It
the
is
Christ
in the current in the current in the current in the current period. You better damn well believe that that is the dominant evil force in the world. Not that they're all powerful, but they are enemy
you know,
number
I,
one.
I know
they're
that.
Enemy number
you know,
one.
But you try to avoid getting down to
but
real.
What do I avoid? What do I avoid?
Okay. You avoid getting down to real discussion of
like what?
Of reason. By making going off into this big sweeping area, you know, of who's bad and who's good, and you know, you well,
well
like about this
know.
Protocol. Well, I you know, there's a lot that could be said.
No, I'm
sure.
I just said it's well, a mistake, and as you know, if you would have listened closely,
I don't know
you would have said
it was a mistake.
Putting it in a baseball context, Hitler made three mistakes. I think my opinion, not yours, but I think he made three egregious mistakes. But the bigger problem isn't just that Hitler made mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. Even the greatest make mistakes. The biggest problem is he didn't have that secondary and tertiary leadership around
oh,
him.
Oh, come on. I've heard you
correct.
Say that. I've heard you say
and
that
I'm
so
right.
many times.
And I'm right.
Oh, you're not
and I'm
right.
right.
You're not right.
I am
right.
absolutely right because
you
we fucking
why?
Lost. We lost. That's why I'm right. And you proved me wrong on that.
And you know what? You live today. In the 20th and 21st centuries, maybe since 1950 or somewhere thereabouts, and you didn't have anything to do with it, and yet you are wanting to judge the people who were there and
I
doing
judge
it.
No one. I judge
yes,
no
are.
One. I explain as
you
best
haven't
I
done
can
a damn
what happened.
For this. What you've been spending your life on Wall Street, and now you get into this. And
no,
you're
I haven't.
Race
no, I haven't. I work. No, I haven't. You take small amounts and turn it into extrapolations, which
you
think you know.
You can
yeah,
correct?
Because I did work on Wall Street. That's not all I've done. I also worked for Lyndon LaRouche. I also worked with Tom Metzger after that, much after that. And I also worked on Wall Street, and I also worked in computers. I also worked at Burroughs. I did many things. But you extrapolate too much from too little.
No, what you
that's
told me, what you told me was that you used to be on, you know all about the Jews because you were on Wall Street.
No, I said, I understand. No, I never said I know all about the Jews. Nobody knows all about the Jews. I said I know a lot. I try not to. I try not to make those extreme statements. And you're pissing me off because you take everything I say as an extreme statement. You don't understand fourth generation warfare. And that is a big problem for all of our white people. We better goddamn well understand fourth generation warfare because that's how these people operate. And they've been knocking us on our backsides forever and a day. We're starting to come back now. Because of maybe people like me, but I think there's a lot better people out there. But you damn well better not stick in the mud and think old. You better think in what's necessary now to win. Because if we don't, all of this is nothing but a goddamn waste of time. All of the human race, all of life on Earth will be a goddamn waste of time because we couldn't figure out the simple idea of progressing to the point where we could get to the stars. Because
well,
we don't
why
get to the
aren't
stars,
you? Well, if this is so convincing and so good, why aren't you convincing more people to do this?
Hopefully not.
Warfare?
I'm not trying to convince the 80% of assholes, the masses. And there's 80% of most, and this is a you know a general number, but 80% of every race. They follow the power. They follow power like lemmings. They may be very good at their jobs. They may be excellent at their jobs. But when it comes to politics, they go along to get along. The 20% and this is general numbers, 20% are people that still retain the reasoning capabilities, whether they're on the enemy side, our side, or someplace in the middle. And almost all are someplace in the middle. That's where the fight is. We, though, are the small, small faction, as they are the small, small faction, fighting for the power to guide that 80%, because the might is in the 80%. The numbers really do count when it comes down to war.
Okay, I want to ask you, I'm dealing with historical questions here and so on, and I still want to ask you where you get it and that Goebbels fought Hitler on the blast-off question, but at that time he was out of favor because of his philanthropy.
Well, he's out of favor. I mean, you should understand that. Just look it up on the blast-off question. I don't know where I read it someplace, and it made total sense, so I went with it. You know, a lot of times I'm putting stuff out there to make people think, but Goebbels definitely was out of favor with Hitler when Goebbels had an affair with a Czech actress. I forget her name.
But
you can read the book.
Yeah.
You can read the PDF.
I know about that. Nope. That's just a minor matter, all right? But where was Goebbels fighting Hitler on Vlasov? That's the point you're making.
I don't know exactly when, but I'm pretty darn sure it was before 1943.
If you're going to say it. You should know. I think you're mixed up because I couldn't find anything.
Carolyn, I, just as you do not know anything for 100% fact, 100% truth, if you think
then
you
I
do,
don't say it.
Wrong. You say
I don't
a
say
lot
it.
Of things. You say a lot of things that are not based. You
but
use
not
Wikipedia.
About this.
My God, you use Wikipedia.
What I'm doing when I use Wikipedia. I know what Wikipedia is, but you can get a more factual outline at Wikipedia than you can get anywhere else on these search engines.
Yeah, and it's put out by, and when it matters, that whole goddamn thing
where do you
is put out by
Type 2. Where do you get your information, Bob? Hey, you know,
Jimmy Wales is
another
a Type 2! Jimmy Wales is a Type fucking Jew!
Oh, come on. You're just being so
He's
ordinary
a Jew.
Here. Oh, you know, who cares? We know what Wikipedia is. I brought on another
you,
scholar who was holding.
And why do you use it?
Well,
why
what
don't
do
you, just
you
use?
Maybe you should
why
use
don't
something.
You, why don't you just use Wikipedia as an initial source and then go to primary sources from Wikipedia?
Well, I don't have time for every show to go to all the primary sources.
Well, you know what?
Neither
you know what, Carolyn? I don't have time to go through all the details either. You know, I only talked about the Nordic myth for at most, total in that show, 8 minutes. Four or 5 minutes at the beginning and 4 or 5 minutes at the end. And I can understand where there could be some misunderstanding. But I don't take bullshit kindly when we're trying to win a war. I don't look gift horses in the mouth, by the way, when we're trying to win a war.
Yeah, I think this is all just loud talk, you know. I mean, it's not really
getting
to the questions. You know, I think it's avoiding. That's what I think it is.
Well,
I've got another caller on the line. Let me see
which
if this caller
question are we
saying.
Avoiding?
Well,
Carolyn,
wait a minute.
Carolyn, before you go farther, which question are we avoiding?
Several questions that I asked you.
Which question?
Okay, Goebbels fighting Hitler.
Well, I read it, and it was prior to 1943. I can't give you the exact time.
Yeah, well, who did you read it from? Who wrote it? You want to talk about crummy sources. You know, you have to. What is the source of it?
Carolyn, I have a weekly Sunday show. It's not made for the masses. It really isn't. It's just a Sunday show for the people that have been around for a few years. Somehow it went around the world. I don't know why, but it did. And I made some points, valid points, I believe, and I don't believe it. I know it. It's pretty obvious stuff to me. It isn't obvious to other people. Well, that's okay. I can handle that. But it's just a Sunday show. Now it's gone around, and you're taking it as I'm trying to be some kind of a god of knowledge of philosophy, religion, and
show. I'm not. If you put on a show and you say things, people have a right to question you if they think what you're saying isn't right, you know? They have a right to do that. If you don't put on a show if you don't want anybody to listen to it. Let me ask who this caller is. Who's on the line? Is this your call showing up again? It's the
there
same.
There's somebody listening.
There's somebody.
There's somebody
okay.
listening.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is someone else. Hi there.
Hi, this is Marcus.
Oh, hi, Marcus. Did you want to say anything?
Yeah, just two quick points.
Okay.
Wolf's show, Alex called in, and he said that Putin, if one day he is like this, one day he is like that. And this Russian general, he is basically the same way. He's one day he's good, and the other day he is a 180. And then the other thing I wanted to say is about the Austrians. Germany is six basic tribes, and Austria is part of the Bavarian tribe. That they are separated has political reasons, not ethnic or racial reasons.
Right.
So that's all I have to say.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you brought up that about Vlasov, because we can go back to that with Bob and say, why does Bob think that this Vlasov was the savior that was going to win the war? Why does he want to make out that a Russian and a Slav was it shows the problem with Hitler that he was too anti-Slavic or too much Germanophile. You use that word, Bob. That this was going to change everything.
Well,
and
I
read that little bit about Vlasov allowing his troops to shoot on the SS in Prague after May 6th, and now what Marcus brought up, saying he was always and I from what I read, I kind of noticed that too, but I wasn't going to say that because I wasn't sure. But that he's kind of back and forth, and I have seen some pictures of him too. And he looks very, very, I don't know what, very Slavic anyway, whatever that, because it's all different kinds of Slavs, so that's
whatever
Slavic.
That means.
But he looks very, he's got a strange face. Sometimes he looks real handsome. But in other pictures, he looks very not Western European, I'll say that.
You might want to blame Russian photography, who knows. But Marcus made my whole case.
Yeah.
Marcus made my whole case. Six basic tribe. Not one, not two, not three, not four, not even five.
What do you think?
Six basic
what
tribes
do you think
in Germany.
Germany are made up of?
One, almost one. They're Laplanders. There's Laplanders. There's Laplanders in the north. Very small proportion. The rest, if you go to demographics of Sweden, you will find the best they can come up with, they're Swedes. You go to Germany. Now, wait a minute, and you listen to me. You listen to me when I bring this up. Here it is. This is what they talk about in Wikipedia, but, okay, Rhinelanders, Westphalians, Hessians, Berliners, Prussians, Swabians, Bavarians, Franconians, Hamburger, Schleswiger, Holsteiner, Saxons, Lower Saxon, Eastphalians, Upper Saxons, and others. And others. Oh, wait, there's Lower Saxons. Don't tell me there isn't diversity in Germany. That's complete BS.
About that. There's not, these tribes have all become part of Germany. They're all German. They're not
the
that
point
different.
Is, the great point that I'm trying to make is that Nordicism on its own is not a panacea. It's part of the white race,
it is.
And it's not the best part. But you said that they were all aiming toward becoming more Nordic, more Nordicist. That's a mistake. You know, sometimes they
say that. Don't, I didn't say that today.
You said it in one of the shows. But you might have just said it in passing. I grant you that. But you did say it. The point is, though, there's no panacea. There's the Mediterranean, no panacea. Alpine, no panacea.
On and on.
Taken as a whole.
Can we just discuss this quietly without all the big...
Well, yeah, you're right. But I get a little pissed off when you talk over me. When you bring up 50, goddamn,
well, you won't
not 50, stop. At least 20 or 25 points instead of sticking to three or four main points. I mean, I try to go through it, and then you interrupt when I'm trying to make a point. And that's when
you're
I started losing
point.
It.
You're
because
making speeches. Now, let's just talk quietly here. Let's see if, if Marcus has anything to say about these six or more these German tribes. Marcus? He's still on. He might be on mute. Okay.
Yeah, what can I say? They didn't become German. They were German in the first place. And it's just the way the nation is made.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's good. So that's good. Yeah, they were all Germanic tribes that make up Germany. I mean, what's the big deal?
But they're different.
You're making something out of that.
There are Celtic influences in some, more in some than the others. There are Nordic influences, more in some than the others. They're different culturally, and there are some racial differences. Quit interrupting me, God damn it.
Well,
quit
it is
interrupting
true
me
everywhere.
Like that. No, you're interrupting me. You know, that's a very bad habit of yours, Carolyn. I'm making a point. Well, they are like this. You want to bring in sub-points, something from outside, which I'm trying to make a point. Well, they're all like this. Well, they do it in Germany. Well, they do it in America. Well, let me make a point, please. Now, let's go to Franz Liszt. Franz Liszt was a German economist. He developed something Marcus probably, or should know about Franz Liszt and the Zollverein. Marcus, tell us about the Zollverein, please.
Well, I'm but Franz Liszt is a composer, an economist.
No, not Franz Liszt, Friedrich Liszt. Excuse me, I made a mistake. Friedrich Liszt and the Zollverein. Zollverein.
Yeah.
Oh, the Zollverein. That's a duty custom union.
Customs union, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, what about it?
Well, why was it needed?
There were all these little German states, like 50 or even more, and they made agreements among each other to basically become a custom union.
Gee, why did they need it, though? They're all Germans.
But just as Austria is or was separated for a long time, so were all the other German little states. One, you know, some states were just a little city.
But what separated all of them?
The royal system. They all had their little dynasty ruler.
But what, did it have something to do with religion, or maybe one of these tribes that you talked about, or maybe possibly a combination?
Well, religion is one part. The Catholics and the Protestants, but it's also just the houses, you know, all the houses of Hesse and this and that, but they were all Germans. It's just that they had their little enclaves and their little states for themselves. That's over time that ceased to exist because there's no it's an obstacle to deal among each other in one state of one people.
That's right. And Frank,
okay, is this caller that I just brought on? Are you making this noise, or is it you, Marcus? I just brought on another caller, 386. You want to say who you are?
So in other words, for economic reasons, what Friedrich Liszt figured out is we must take all these different ethnicities, cultures, with some racial characteristics that are different in each one, if you go from north to south, but you can think what you want. But what Friedrich Liszt did is he created a customs union in Germany. This, and I avow, this was the precursor to the Second Reich, Bismarck.
You're talking about race here. And
I'm not talking about race. I'm not talking about race. I'm talking about racial characteristics. There are some differences. We are racial mixes in Germany. And that's the whole point of the Nordic myth. They are very homogeneous as Nordics, and we see the flaw becoming too much one thing within our white race. They become extremely gullible, naive, and you can see the results.
You said that Germany is the most ethnically diverse country in Europe. That's what you said.
It is.
Wait,
I must make one exception. I must make one exception because it's so far out in the other side, and that's Russia and this whole Eurasianism, Pan-Slavic thing. Let's leave that out. That's a whole other question. It's huge. Let's leave that out. France is somewhat ethnically diversified. And sure, Switzerland has three language groups, but if you look at the DNA composition of them, they're very close. But they really do have three language groups, French, German, and Italian. But Italians are, for the most part, southern Italy is Mediterranean, northern becomes much more Nordic, but most other countries are mixes, as is Germany. Germany is a beautiful mix. They called it Ultramontane. Have you heard of that?
Tired of you trying to act like such an expert.
I'm not an expert. I just tell you the best I know.
Okay, but if
you don't agree with it, don't listen
true.
To the goddamn shows.
Germany is the most ethnically mixed country.
Well,
you're mixing things up.
In Europe, and I'll say outside of Russia, who is then?
Well, you have the Hungarians, as you already mentioned. You have the Romanians. You have the Bulgarians.
They're more ethnic. Wait a minute, Marcus. You're saying Romania is more diverse than Germany?
Maybe not Romania, but Hungary for sure.
Hungary just has two out of many provinces which they allowed in.
With different ethnicities.
They're not nearly as ethnically diverse as Germany. That's what made it work. Germany worked because they could put it together, and it was a masterful thing that they could put it together. The one thing that combined Germany was the German language. And even the German language has high, low German and variations.
Oh, God. Talk about that, Marcus. High and low German.
Yes.
Sure, there's thin
dialects. You have the standard German language.
But what are the others? Everybody in Germany uses the same one?
Stop interrupting all the time. All right, Mark.
Okay.
And you have all the dialects. And some dialects, they used to be so strong, and some of them are still are, like Dutch is today. To Germans. It's very related, but it's, you know, if you talk to someone from the mountains in Bavaria, it's very hard to understand what they say.
Mm-hmm.
But let me say something here now. These dialects have nothing to do with how German they are. They're just different dialects because of different regions. Like the southern, different dialects in the United States. It doesn't make people different. All white people in the United States feel like they're Americans. They don't think that they're not the same because they live in a different region and have a different accent. In Germany, there never has been any thought that people were less German.
I have no problem, Carolyn, understanding an American type. I'm not talking about the mestizos or any others, but the old line Americans. I have no problem. Even the Southerners with their twang, I have no problem understanding exactly what they say. Marcus, is that the same in Germany in all cases with these lesser dialects?
Yeah, as I said, some dialects are very, very strong, and then you have before the German people constituted the unified language conferences. The written language was very, very different, and the dialects were very strong. As I said, Dutch, in that way, they didn't join the conference of the standardization of the German language, so they went another way. But before the standardization, all the written language and the spoken language were pretty separate from each other. And then they came up with this idea of High German, and everybody can speak that among each other, and it's easier to communicate. But it's nevertheless, each language and each dialect is German, So.
Most dialects can be understood by other people. They're not that different.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, but they
That's
have some differences.
True.
But you were mentioning, you said some Bavarian dialects or, you know, some little areas or something were real heavy. But that isn't generally the case with the dialects. So, like, I know
in the Austrian dialect,
yeah, they have some words. They have their own kind of words for certain things, which other people don't use, you know. But they're just few words here and there.
Yeah,
that's true.
The dialects are just dialects. You can understand each other, but I'm talking about the, before, I don't know, maybe 1700, something like that, the German dialects were so strong, it was very hard to understand each other.
Oh. Well, how did they get around that?
Good question. But it was basically the same language, but they also used the, however they spoke, they also wrote that way. And then they came up with a standardization of German language.
Okay. I've got, we're going off the air for the live listeners. Are you still there, Bob?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. Because I've got a question mark in front of a couple of these first two calls. I don't know what that means. But I've got everybody on except for the fourth one down here. He's on mute still. I don't know who that is. I'm confused now about who's who. But, do you think, Marcus, do you think that the reason that that Germany was able to become anti-Jewish under Hitler and fight off the Jew was due to their many ethnicities, according to Bob, or their mixed race, what he calls mixed race. He did use the term mixed race. Or was it due to other reasons?
I never, Carolyn, I have to butt in, I never used the term mixed race. Look into it. Listen to it. I never used the term mixed race in that presentation. I listened to it. No, it came close. And I must say, if you take the first section, which is about 5 minutes, and the second section, you must take them together. The second section, I can see where you got that idea. I never said mixed
okay, maybe you didn't.
Race.
I didn't. Okay.
I didn't.
Okay. Okay. But
no,
that's what you mean.
No, I didn't. No, I didn't.
Well, not
if
race.
I didn't
see,
say it,
in
I
Germany,
didn't
we're talking about race not as black, white, yellow,
no,
but
we're talking,
as
we're talking. No, we're talking ethnicities. We're talking ethnicities and tribes. If you want to look at the white and the Negro, the Caucasoid and Negroid and Mongoloid as separate species, well, then you could talk at that level, but since most people don't look at them as separate species, we can't.
Hitler, in his conversations and so on, they used the term race when they meant the different Germanic tribes and so on.
Ethnicities and
race
characteristics.
So they weren't,
I understand. I understand.
Here. Okay. What were you going to say, Marcus?
Well, after World War One, Germany was hit very hard. And I think that's a big, big indicator that they could do something. We see this now in Greece. They are being hit very hard, and something's developing there. So, and I don't know. It's probably not only about whatever the makeup is of the nation.
Yeah, so that's right. And I was going to say it was because Hitler was able to bring them together, but the reason he was able to do that was because of World War One and the Treaty of Versailles and those terrible punishments that they gave to Germany and didn't want to lift them either, you know. And that was really the glue and the reason that Germans could get so angry and get so feel like that drove them together because it was just Germany that was being picked on like that. They knew it was being done to them purposely. And so it made them come together.
What?
Right, Bob?
What's that now? I might have missed the point. Well, I might have missed what point were you making?
I said, do you think it was Germany's, I had asked Marcus, do you think it was Germany's mixture, I won't say mixed race, okay, mixture, mixed population that caused them to be able to do what they did against the Jews, which is what you were saying, which is what your whole premise is, Bob.
I never said that.
Of your whole thing here.
I know. No, you're jumping.
Or was it some
you're
other?
And to conclusions.
He came.
Carolyn,
well, okay, let me finish answering. So he came.
Well, then you let me finish answering. I started answering, then you butt in yourself.
You interrupted me. I was trying.
But
to
you
say.
Interrupted me when you asked.
I asked you, what did you say?
I asked, what did you say? And you told me, and then I started answering. You came back. I mean, don't you see that?
I heard you say you didn't say that, okay? How many times do you want to say it?
Well, you didn't let me continue. I said I didn't say that, and then I was going to explain what I did say. You didn't give me a chance.
Well, you can say that after I finish what I was saying.
You did finish. I thought you were finished, and then you said,
"Well, no, I wasn't."
Don't you understand how you're jumping in, jumping to conclusions?
I swear
it should be an Olympic sport. You'd be a gold medalist.
You know, you've done plenty of that here, Bob.
I have.
And you're not allowing me to complete anything before you jump
you're
in.
You're not
and
allowing me to. You're not allowing
well,
me to.
This is so silly. So childish.
It is. So
it is
now,
childish.
But the point is, reiterate your question and then let
That's
me
what I was trying
reiterate
to
what I was. Okay, go
That's
ahead.
That's what I was trying to do. All right. I had asked Marcus if he thought it was some other reason, and then after you broke in for something.
Reason for what?
For the Germans being able to be successful in fighting against the Jews. The Germans being able to come together to do that. And and he said he thought it was World War One had a lot to do with it because they were suffered so much during and after, or mostly after World War One. And so I was bringing up the Versailles Treaty and all those punishments and so on. And I agreed with him. I thought that was great because I thought I was going to say that Hitler was able to bring them together, but that is the reason that Hitler was able to bring them together, that they realized that they were being singled out. Well, see, you're interrupting me here.
Carolyn, that is not me.
Oh, somebody's on the line laughing, huh? Who is it, I wonder? I don't know. They don't want to talk, but they want to laugh.
Okay,
Bob.
Okay,
I think I'm back on.
I think
this one is, you know, nobody likes Pastor Martin Lindstedt. And so I know which one he is, so I'm going to he's got a question mark before his name.
Well, just don't unmute him. Just don't unmute him. Don't kill him. Leave him
I'd
on
like
so that
kill
he
him.
Can't call in again.
I would like to kill him. How do I kill him?
I mean, his Skype, whatever it is on your blog talk, you know. Deal.
Yeah, I want to get rid of him.
Well, no,
anyway,
don't, because then he'll call in again.
Okay, is this you, Marcus? Okay, Marcus, is that you? Is this you? Is that you, Marcus?
Hello?
Okay.
This is Marcus.
Yeah. Okay, you're back on again. Well, you and Bob are using the same number, and these others
are
something else.
I have something to say about this so-called secret protocol, and if you look at the National Socialist 25 points and everything that is said about private property, about economic issues and so forth, it's not communistic. It is pro-worker, but at the same time it's pro-business and pro-private property. So if there were factions within the National Socialists who were more communistic and they wanted to have their way, well, then I don't agree with that whatsoever.
Yeah.
Well, the point is, Marcus, that my problem with it if you were to read the document, and it is in the info tab, and everybody can go there later, we shouldn't talk about that anymore. Hopefully Carolyn will cut that out because it's a much ado about nothing. But it is at the info tab. The link is there going to the presentation at resist.com, not my website, where the whole thing is explained. You know, I read through it, and I thought it was a big to-do. And, yeah, he's trying to assuage the fears of the Ruhr Valley industrialists, and other people got involved. Apparently there were only 20 copies produced. There was one that survived in some company's library in Stuttgart. Okay, we were lucky. But you read it, the translation, and it isn't that big a deal.
But at the same time, it isn't
that big a deal.
No, let's talk about the deal.
But my,
well, you made it a big deal. You called it his first mistake.
God damn it. I'm going to hang up right now if you interrupt me.
Well, you won't stop. You know, you already answer. Here, is he gone? No, he's still here. He already answers. And then, you know, he hung up. All right, let's talk about this for a minute here, Marcus. He put it in here. It was he says Hitler's first mistake in 1927 with the secret protocol on the Ruhr Valley, or was the secret protocol, I guess, or was with or something. This was a good thing that Hitler did to alleviate the fears of the industrialists and get the industrialists on board with his National Socialism, because they didn't like the communists. And that was really the secret of his success in taking over the country. I don't think he could have done it otherwise. And then they were still functioning and working, and there was the production was still going, and there was no way for unions to stop and go on strike anymore. That was another thing he did, which the class conscious people don't like.
Well, the trade unions are not needed anymore if you get rid of this so-called crony capitalism, which is just capitalism in itself. If you get rid of that, and you have and then you still have the people who own factories and who are geniuses and have patents and all that, they are still allowed to earn more, but not these proportions where they make so much money and the rest of the workers they make minimum wages or less. Hitler never was against business owners or people who are geniuses and create business and so on. So I don't have a real problem with that whatsoever, with this agreement, because the communists, what they did, they just slaughtered the elites and then took over whatever is there, used it up, and within 20 years there was nothing left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they took it over, and the state took it over, and it was all in the control of their party. And Hitler didn't do that. You know, see, I'm sorry, Bob had such a hard time on this show, but he keeps, you know, he doesn't want to just respond to what he actually said on his show, and then he wants to say we didn't say it, and he doesn't want to discuss it. But he was saying, well, that really wasn't so bad. Well, he calls it Hitler's first mistake. Well, it wasn't a mistake at all. It was a smart thing that he did. Would you say that, Marcus? Or I haven't read
national,
it.
National socialism is not international socialism. It's
right.
It's a form of being social within your country. That means that you, as a worker, you do your duty, you go to work, and you obey what your superior tells you. But at the same time, your superior is supposed to be a decent man who cares for you and your needs and gives you a decent wage and doesn't just rob you of, you know, this typical capitalist slavery.
Mm-hmm.
But they still make more money. But Hitler said that in this Baltic land speech, that the you know, these people who just show up once a year and make decisions over you know thousands of workers, and they get so much money for that, those people they should be this system should be eliminated. But what's so bad about if you have a manager who's responsible for making all these decisions, if he makes instead of, let's say, $5,000 a month, he makes $10,000 or $15,000, $20,000. The wage differences weren't so unfair, and the workers, they could all afford a house and a car and so on. So, and that's what workers just want, you know. They just want mm-hmm. a decent little life and a garden. But a manager, he also needs some extra money to pay for hotels and a nice suit and all that. So
well, he has
all.
To take more responsibility, and you always guess what you get money for. You get paid for the amount of responsibility you're willing to take. And in the National Socialist system, it was all about the responsibility. You know, the higher you went, the more responsibility you had. And you had to accept that you were responsible for what your job was and what was under you. Right?
Yeah, that's right. So my problem, why we lost, is not Germany at all. I mean, it was in its baby stages, this whole idea of the thousand-year Reich, and there was still the inheritance of democracy and the monarchy even. But the problem was the other states who didn't, especially the bigger states, who actively worked against it. And that just crushed the whole operation. So, I mean, whatever you can criticize within Germany, what Goebbels did or here and there, that's just everyday life. It's just things that happen. But the reason why it was destroyed was not because of inner problems, not at all.
Right, and what about the Vlasov thing? I mean, I know what your take is on that probably, but, you know, to make such an important thing and for Bob to say, and he did say, that if Hitler had allowed Vlasov to do what he wanted to do, the war would have been over. It was that meant Germany would have won World War II immediately.
Yeah, you know, as you said, I'm not even so familiar with this person, but as you said, he turned against the SS, so that tells me a lot. And he also turned against his government, even if they were Marxist and controlled by, you know, our friends from the desert region.
Mm-hmm.
But they were opportunists. And they had their own agenda.
You know, I've just got a clear idea about him now, and I actually developed it yesterday, but I think I can say it, that he was looking to save himself, and I think he also was looking to have a great career. And when he was captured, well, he wasn't captured immediately after his division was defeated. He hid out for a while, and obviously he was a very resourceful man. He was a good general. They say he was very good, but he hid out for a while, but he got caught. And when he did, it didn't take him too long to start cooperating with the Germans and say he didn't like the you know, the government there, and he wanted to overthrow it, and he wanted to help do that and so on. So I think he was wanting to survive mostly, and they wouldn't let him for a long time, but he kept trying. And when he finally did get to, then at the end there, he was convinced that if he was going to survive, he should try to do something for Russia again, for the Soviet Union again. So he went along with what his, supposedly, this is the story, with what his one of his generals said, one of his commanders wanted to do, and he allowed him to do it. And then, but what he should have done is if he was, I don't know, maybe he could say he was trying to save his troops, but he already had already been giving all these speeches to the Russian POWs that they were going to be killed by Stalin or sent to Siberia, that there was no way they were going to be able to be repatriated to, you know, to that country. So he must have known that wasn't going to happen for him. He should have shot himself. He should have committed suicide if he didn't want to face up what was coming. But he turned again. You know, he turned and then he ended up being hung on the gallows. It was, I don't think he showed something being wrong with him as far as really, really believing or really being behind what he was saying he was for. I don't see him as a very good figure.
Yeah, I don't know that much about him, only what you just said and what I heard. But just as Putin, I mean, we can praise Putin on all the good that he does, but at the same time, he does so many bad things. And can you trust him? And I would say those two people are pretty similar in their characters.
Yeah, very possible. You know, speaking of that, and speaking of the race issue, and not just, let me say, race, but the tribal, the different varieties of white races, if you call it that, or white groups. Hitler was always... He was always very big on that. You know, nobody can. Anybody who tries to say that Hitler was going to be was not race was not important to him in ethnicity and so on. It really was, and Germanism was important to him. And he didn't trust people. He knew better than to trust. He tended not to trust Slavs, and I think he grew up with Czechs in as a boy in school. There were some Czechs, you know, in his classes, and he didn't just meet up with them in Vienna later, but he didn't trust the Slavs. He thought they were very different, and there's a lot of conversation about that in Table Talk. And our general white nationalist thinking is that we're all the same. We're all brothers and sisters, and we're all one, and we should trust one another. We need to work together, and so on. I think there's differences, and I think everybody. You have people, each nationality being partial to their own nation first. Well, I think that's normal, and then you have them being partial to the West or the East after that. So there's a lot of room to not be on the same page on everything. And if you say, well, we don't have to be on the same page on everything, but on the main things, on the main points. Well, even that, you know, the other things will get in the way of that. I just think, as I started out in the very beginning, I said that I think we need to be more realistic about white unity and not so pie in the sky about it. That's all. I agree that for every white person, they should care about what happens to the white race, because when we lose all power, we're going to be treated, I won't be around, but we're going to be treated like really bad, you know, and it's going to be horrible. So we should come together on that. But we have to be realistic, and we have to tell the truth. We have to understand what we're talking about. It doesn't help for Bob Tom Metzger to be attacking Hitler the way they do and saying that he just made all these mistakes. And now Bob's big thing is that if Hitler had secondary and tertiary people under him, he had ministers and he had people and so on, but he thinks that somehow there should have been like a coup taking over Adolf Hitler at the end. Somebody should have taken him out, you know. Well, there were some what we call traitors trying to do that in the military. That was trying to be done, but they didn't have a better plan because they were just going to go along with the Allies, and they thought the Allies would somehow work out and, you know, work something out with him when we know that Hitler was absolutely right, that those that the Allies had already decided, and almost at the beginning of the war they had decided, but without putting it down on paper, but that, you know, that there was no way they were going to let Germany survive as it had been. This time they were going to destroy Germany. Hitler understood that, but so many of them didn't understand that, and they don't understand it today. And so Bob will say Hitler was a disaster, created a disaster, just like Abe Lincoln did. Things like that. That's not helpful. So do you have any comment on that before we close?
Yeah, if you listen to this Hitler's bodyguard, I forgot his first name. His last name is Gauser, I believe. And he said at the beginning of the Poland campaign that the generals, they wanted to invade, but Hitler himself was still reluctant. But they, you know, you had all these generals who were in favor of it, so mm-hmm. they were the secondary and tertiary people there. Mm-hmm. And he just, you know, well,
yeah, they were in favor
of
it at that time. Hitler was really hesitant, but it was at that time the military wanted to go into Poland. They understood the situation.
Yes,
true.
I'm just saying that it's not like Hitler had the last and the only say in Germany. You had your secondary leaders mm-hmm. and the general atmosphere in Germany. You couldn't just do whatever you want like a dictator. That doesn't work. So I don't know.
No, he wasn't like
that.
I don't know.
I don't understand.
You know,
that.
Bob is a real nice guy. I'm really sorry we had such a. I couldn't deal with what he was saying. He couldn't deal with what I was saying. But he does tend to think that he's got all the answers, and then he says he doesn't. But he talks like he does, and he's just not right about quite a number of things. And then when you question him on them, like these two items. He doesn't have an answer for it, really. The Ruhr district thing was not, and the Goebbels, fighting for Vlasov. I don't think Goebbels ever met Vlasov until that meeting in 1945, and I don't think he got himself worked up or involved himself in the actual fighting. And the battles and so on, and how the war should be run. He didn't do that. And so I think that Bob is totally wrong about that Goebbels thing, and he admitted that he just remembers seeing it somewhere, reading it somewhere. And so he repeated it, and he doesn't seem to think there's anything wrong with that. You know, he'll go between – I don't want to be here criticizing him when he's not here, but that's you know, that's the problem that I have, and I've had it with other shows that he's done. Now he'll have a problem with me on everything. Anyway, Mark.
Yeah, one last thing. That what I said when we talked about this issue before. These dirty tricks that you just capture an army and in general of a foreign country, and then you just use them for your own war. Objectives. That's against international law and the rules of warfare and so on. So, you know, the Allies did that quite a lot, especially during the last years. They just captured a country and then they forced them to declare war on Germany. But that's not how the rules of law work. So maybe they were just reluctant and wanted to, you know, follow the rules because they knew they had their own generals and armies captured in other countries, the Soviet Union and France, and they didn't want...
Oops. Oh, I hung up the wrong phone number for... I get confused with these phones, darn it. I hung up on Marcus, thinking there was some other caller hanging on here, and there's no way I could get confused except that I just am. So, all right, I'm going to end the show, ladies and gentlemen. Marcus was saying that it's against the rules of war to turn officers, particularly generals and stuff, into abusing them to fight on your side. You're supposed to just keep them in captivity and treat them well, and you weren't able to use them. And so he's saying that the Germans were doing the right thing by not using Vlasov. Well, Bob has had an answer to that in the past, saying, well, when it comes to war, there's no rules. Everything goes blah, blah, blah. But, you know, they play on these rules big time, and they certainly used all these rules to condemn Germany during the Nuremberg trials, and then everybody believes in the rules when they can use them against Germany. And Germany, as most people know, is following the rules more than anyone else. Now, it was Vlasov who wanted to do that, and of course, right at the end, they allowed it. But, all these questions, I think that we answered some. At least we found out, you know, whether there was an answer to some of these things or not. And so, ladies and gentlemen, this show's gone on long enough, and I want to thank you for listening, and I will see you on Monday. I'm going to be continuing with Hitler and the Slavs, it turns out, on Monday, and talking about Ukraine. So that I think will be interesting. So we're signing off for now with Saturday afternoon with Carolyn on November 15th, 2014. Bye for now.